2022 Public Safety Committee meeting. Present, we have Alderman Merrick, Alderman Solon, Alderman Tarulis, along with Chief Jensen and Deputy Chief Fizenmayer. Are there any citizen comments on tonight's agenda? I don't see anyone here at City Hall, and I don't see anyone on our Zoom, so that is no. Then we'll move to minutes for correction or approval from our January 6, 2022 meeting. Anyone have any additions, deletions, amendments to the minutes from our last meeting? No? Okay, those will be presented and approved. Now we move on to new business. First item on the agenda is PS 2022-4 monthly report review for December 2021 and January 2022.
So if it's okay with you, we also have a report tonight on the annual report that's coming through. So I can go through these very quick just because December is going to be pretty much covered in the annual report, if that's all right. I go into more detail in January if you guys prefer, but you tell me what you want and we'll go from there.
Take the lead.
All right. So how about if I skip December, unless you guys have specific questions, and I'll go right to January because we'll cover that in the annual report. So January's monthly overtime hours worked, 51 of the 77 hours were reimbursed overtime through HIDA, CPAT, and CIT. We had several community policing initiatives. We also gave blood as a department. Roman Sebing organizes that, and so we had a blood drive. I think we had 31 total units of blood. We did beat the sheriff's office a second year in a row, which is a good thing. So Roman and actually Bear helped set that up over at the library. It was a really bad, snowy, rotten day, but we did pretty good. Listen there, community presentations and meetings and training. We had a total of 329 hours of training during the month of January. January's total crashes were 54. Crashes in on again every, looks like Saturday is probably the biggest day for at least the month of January. The time frame between 2 and 6 p.m. So it's kind of funny, we talk about it every month, I bring it up every month, and not one month is consistent with the next as far as the day and the time frame. So then we have traffic complaint and enforcement areas. You can see the different areas that we hit as far as Cannonball Trail. There we go. As far as Cannonball Trail and east and west, the 47, downtown Route 34. So I'll go to the directed patrol detail data, kind of list those same locations. We had 12 details conducted on McHugh Road for a total time of 7.65 hours. The next high, or the highest one, we had Route 34 and Route 47 with 50 and 51 details for over 100 hours each. Obviously, those continue to be our high speed areas. You know, when you have a four lane highway and we have several of them in town, you know, you're gonna get some pretty good speeders in there. And then we're also utilizing our community service officers quite a bit with the, can you mute me? That makes two of us, because I'm not. So we had six areas that are monitored more for speeding complaints. Before we put resources, our sworn people at different places, we get a lot of times people call and say, hey, they're flying down this road. So one of the first things we do is we put our CSOs out there with a radar gun in an unmarked car, trying to track cars and for different periods of time. And then we send letters, courtesy notices to people that are hitting a certain speed to basically say, hey, Jim Jensen, you were seen speeding on this date at this time. This is the vehicle with the license plate. Please slow down. So it's more of a kind of a neighborhood thing. When you get into traffic enforcement, it looked like, well, it looks like January from 2022 compared to 2021, we were up 47 citations. Dan, I don't know if you're seeing this in the courthouse or not, but we are seeing a lot of suspended registrations all of a sudden. And we can't necessarily tell you why, other than the state SOS must be doing something different. But they are all over the place. I talked to somebody at the county today. They got the same thing. So they're getting plates that are suspended for like non-insurance,
sure, yeah,
and things like that where they previously weren't doing that. And I think over COVID, people maybe didn't pay for their car insurance. but there is a ton of license plates being suspended for that. And so we're running into it a lot more than we ever used to. And then we also had warnings. We had 78 more warnings this year as compared to January of last year.
With $5,000 fines.
Yeah, it is great. Well, and then it's an admin tow for things. So, so we've got a lot of young people that are out and very, very aggressive with traffic, which is a good thing. But if I look at the speeding tickets, for the 47 tickets, more tickets this year as compared to January of last year, a majority of them were for other moving violations. 15 of the 47 were for speeding. And our people haven't been writing. If you've been looking at pass on that we send you guys, we're getting Class A misdemeanor speeds on areas of highway, which means they are going 25 plus over the speed limit. You're going to see under the detective squad information, we've kind of redesigned that section. We used to just list cases with cases closed, but trying to explain and show what our detective bureau does, the amount of work that they do. We've kind of broken it down into criminal cases, non-criminal cases assigned, and there's a list of, quite a few different items. And then along with total cases assigned, cases closed, and arrests and evidence, which is something we've always reported. But we really wanted to try to break down exactly what they're doing as far as certain criminal cases. There's also many cases that we investigate and things that we do in investigations like background checks for liquor licenses. Those take hours. They don't, they're not, and when I say hours, it's not, 10 or 15, but it's 2 or 3 hours. It could be as much as 10 or 15, depending on the history of the person that they're looking into. So every time you guys approve a liquor license, obviously there's work on our end making sure that, that person, the history meets the standards of what the city expects. We look over at our reports taken, our part one and part two crimes. What you're going to see for part one crimes is we are 62 less part one crimes this time last year as compared to this year, or I should say January. But January, February, we still had a lot of the unemployment fraud going on. So if you look at the difference, you had 70 in January of 2021. We had 7 in January of 2022. So that's really the major difference. And part two crimes were down 8. The major differences, domestic batteries, we were up, and we'll go over this in the annual report, we were up in domestic violence cases for the year in 2021. The good thing is we're starting lower in 2022 with January, which is a good thing. Going down to our calls for service, we've added a line there. We've totaled up the line. That's another small change that we did with our monthly report. Our average for 2020, 21, and 22, the average is about 1,100 calls. For 2022, we were 1,131. 2021, we were 1,156. And in 2020, we were 1,050. So you're going to start seeing and being able to compare. You can pretty much tell what our busy months are. Some of that has to do with weather, obviously, and calls for service and, crashes and things like that. And the last part of January's report is our squad patrol operations, squad car operations. We had monthly mileages about 545 miles less. You see our gasoline expenditures is $2,100 more. And our gallons of gasoline, part of the reason we're over or up is we had 75 more gallons of gasoline. Cost of gasoline, we are over. However, one of the things I did want to bring up is our gasoline budget for our current FY22 budget. We budgeted $62,348. At 9 months, we've spent $49,400. We are projected to be over budget, even with the increase in gasoline. We're projected to be over just short about $3,600, which we thought was going to be more. But one of the things that Bear and his group have started doing is, unless it's single digits, we're not running cars. So guys are getting into cold cars. As you know, takes a lot of gas. Doesn't think so, but as a car's idling, it's wear and tear, and it costs a lot of money. So we've tried to do some things to mitigate that. We were thinking we were going to be 10 grand over budget. Gas prices get to $5 a gallon, we're going to be 10 grand over budget. But if they stay fairly consistent, we should be pretty close. So. Questions on January.
One question?
PC-2022-05, the Yorkville Police Department 2021 Annual Report Review.
So I put one, I grabbed it out of your boxes. So we just actually got this done and finally printed yesterday. As I'm going through today, I found two more mistakes as we went through, and the mistakes fall on me because the number was actually wrong. They're small, but still a few mistakes. So I'd like to go through this fairly quickly if you guys have it, give you guys a chance to, you know, obviously review, because there is a lot of information. One of the things that we've tried to do is really talk about what each division does, and have, between Ray and Bear and Garrett, this is your chance to really talk about what you do and how you do it. And talk about, in some cases, how busy we are, and in some ways, how we can improve as a police department. So, kind of going through into the third page, you know, our authorized staff was at 33 officers. We are at 32 full-time officers, which is fantastic, with a total staff of 43. If you look at page 7, our calls for service, we were up. Or I should say calls for service, it's more incidents, calls for service. Anything where our officers get on the radio, there's an incident number generated, whether it's a 911 call or a traffic stop. We had over 1,000 more than what we did in 2020. So some of that is just being more active on the streets. Some of it is obviously more calls for service as well. And then we have our department goals. We had our goal for 2021 was wellness, and we focused on three initiatives: financial wellness, family social wellness, physical wellness, and mental health. Our focus is listed in the annual report under each goal, like financial wellness. The bullet points that you see, those are the things that we try to focus on. Whether we had people come in and talk, whether we had presentations to the officers, whether we've had you know, just basic budgeting, and we discuss college planning and things like that. These are kind of the initiatives and the bullet points that as our wellness committee got together, this is what we wanted to bring to the rest of the department. One of the things that we really try to focus on is goal number 4, our mental health. There's a lot of things that, you know, just like everybody in the public, as you guys have seen, it's just been a rough kind of 2 years. And so we are doing wellness checks with our officers, which is now statutory as well, but we're doing wellness checks with our officers. We started last year before the statute came out. It's just a good thing to do. So our officers are meeting with a psychologist for 55 minutes session. They have the ability to go for more if they choose to. A lot of times our insurance covers that, but our PD picks up the first session, and it's a chance for them just to kind of sit down. They don't report back to us. The psychologist doesn't report back to us. This is just a wellness check for our people. Jumping over to the administration side, there's some budget information in there. One of the charts that I did want to bring up was the cost per capita. What we did is we went around to different agencies, cities, villages. You see Batavia all the way through Yorkville. We tried to keep agencies that were very similar in size to us. We tracked their total department budget, their full-time sworn, and then their population. And if you look in there, probably the largest one in here is Batavia. Batavia is not that much bigger than we are. Their total population is 26098. We're at 21533. Their total operating budget is just over $5 million more than what we have. So we tried to give a good spread from Batavia all the way to North Aurora, which is a little bit smaller than us, but not by much. And then we have some other communities of note, more Kendall County communities at the bottom there. So we're able to see where we rank as far as what our total operating. So the budget numbers there are operating and capital. So there are some years, some agencies, if they're looking to buy 5 cars, of course their capital budget's gonna go a little bit higher. Some years they may buy 1 car, so their capital budget could go a little bit lower. But I think it's a pretty good comparison as far as agency size, population, what we spend budgeting-wise, cost per capita, you know, what kind of services are we providing with our total budget, with the number of officers we have. And I think we rank pretty well. That's obviously a kudos to you guys for letting us being able to do that, because that doesn't always happen that way. And then jumping over hours worked, that was one of the mistakes in 2021 on page 13, or should be 43, not 41. And then you see our new hires, resignations. Here's a couple cool things. You know, while we did lose Officer Nichols, he went to Addison Police Department. Officer Caruso, Officer Shapiyama are three CSOs in blue. And then if you go to the next page, we obviously hired Officer Warren and Officer Lobdell. You guys sat in while we did the swearing-in ceremony. What is really kind of cool about the new hires and the resignation section is if you look at the part that says, and where is it? I think it might be in another part, CSOs to cops. So Marisa was an old CSO of ours. Carter Aktabowski was a CSO of ours, and he went to Dallas Police Department. So Bear has done a phenomenal job of interviewing and identifying community service officers and then making sure that we train them and we train them well enough so that they can go out into a law enforcement career, which is what most of them want. So the three ones that we've had recently, all three are cops. Jesus got hired by Aurora PD, then you have Marisa, then you have Carter. The three in the blue on page 15, they all want to be police officers. And so we're going to be testing. So two of the three are old enough to test and will be testing with us and hopefully can bring them on. So I just thought that was kind of a cool little thing. Our professional standards report on page 18, what we do is we receive and we investigate all complaints that come into the organization. Somebody calls and wants to remain anonymous, we investigate those complaints. We received five complaint inquiries where somebody has come in and said, hey, Jim Jensen was rude to me on a stop, I want to make a complaint. And we track those. And so you see in our professional standards report, we've had five of them. And they all came out to be unfounded, which is a good thing. But wanted to put that out there that we do track those. It's not something somebody complains and we just blow it off. We look into every complaint. Jumping over to investigations, noteworthy investigations, there's a few there. We had the Yorkville Target that was burglarized in January 20th of last year. We did catch the people. There was a ton of stuff that came out when that first happened saying, oh my God, it's protesters. It was not protesters. It was a burglary crew. And Pat McMahon and his group worked with other agencies who had been targeted by the same group of people. We were able to charge them. We had a couple other larger cases in there in September. The bottom bullet point, Angel Chavez Herrera, three counts of ag bat, three counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse on a sex case. And then we had a couple other larger cases throughout the year, like Francisco Andino with aggravated domestic battery, stalking. When Sergeant Nelson got promoted from detective to sergeant, we replaced Sergeant Nelson, or Detective Nelson, with Detective Johnson now, and he's working amazingly well in there. As far as our records department, there's a section in there talking about the work that our records department, keep in mind, we have three full-time records people. So they are everything that when we increase in reports, they're increasing in workload. The nice thing about what you guys approved not too long ago is Brazos, our e-citation. That's going to allow us to reduce some of the workload with our record staff simply because it's now all electronic and uploads automatically. I'm going to jump over to our sex offender, page 26, violent offender registration. We do have several sex offenders and violent offenders that are registered legally within our city. Our detective bureau, they go out every month and they pick kind of a random sampling of the offenders and they check on them. So some cities and some agencies, they don't check on their sex offenders at all. It's important we check on them. And it's important that when we go and they don't answer, we put a big old yellow tag on their door and they have to call in and they have to check in with us. It's also a way for us to verify if they're in violation of what the statute is, and then we get criminal charges for that. But as they register, we also make sure that they're complying with the statute. They have to be so far away from a park. They have to be so far away from a school. And as you can imagine, in a neighborhood, if the sex offender moves into a neighborhood, we get the phone call after phone call after phone call. So compliance checks, 2020 as compared to 2021, you're going to see a major difference with COVID and everything. Obviously, we didn't do alcohol compliance checks. We did have nine violations this year at different restaurants. stores throughout the community that we've dealt with. School resource officer, page 29. Officer Goldsmith he's one of the best SROs I think I've seen in my career. He has such a way of working with kids and parents. And he's just motivated to do some really cool things. So he started a criminal justice club at the Yorkville High School. He's looking to do the same thing at the intermediate school. And he's in the classroom and he's working with the teachers in the classrooms to work on different things, to talk about, you know, guest speakers with the state's attorney's office, DUIs, traffic stops, teaching driver's ed classes, and things like that. So it's a pretty nice description of what Officer Goldsmith does. There's a great section on page 30 of our 2021 highlights for our CSOs. CSOs are they're not free labor, but they're also not sworn officer labor, if that makes sense. While we pay CSOs, we pay them significantly less amounts of money to go out and handle a total of 542 calls for service this year that range from a variety of different things. That's a sworn officer you pay a lot of money for. Sworn officers handling that, you know, we're able to keep the officers on the street doing certain things while our CSOs are handling some of those calls for service. College internship, both high school and college, you can read about that. It's actually a really a good program, and we're hoping that we can bring some of those interns in and test with us as well. And then we have our vehicle data and our vehicle breakdown. The nice thing about this here, the data that you're seeing, our projected FY22 maintenance budget, which was originally a budget amount of $60,000, we're going to be projected to be at about $40,000. A large part of that is due to you guys buying new vehicles, so we're not having to always fix older vehicles. So, you know, that's huge. But Bear is also very frugal with what he does and what he spends money on. What we can fix, we fix. So we have a total of 22 vehicles in our fleet. Jumping over to field operations data, the second mistake is under DUI arrest for 2020. That should be 34, not 39. So when you look at this number, the total number of crashes, the one thing that probably needs more explanation than anything is total crashes, traffic crashes is 565. If you look below, you're going to see 432. The 565 number, that includes private property crashes, which the number below does not include. Private property crashes are not necessarily state accident crashes that we take. So that's the difference between those two numbers. Then there's kind of good and bad news with our crashes. Our property damage crashes, we were down 118 as compared to 2020, way down from 2019. But our personal injury crashes are up 61 and way up from 2019. So obviously there's goods and bads. Our overall crashes, if you add the both, you know, together, we're down 57, which is a good thing. Another bright spot is our crime rate. Our explanation, page 35, our index, part one and part two crimes, we are 209 less. Most of that is because of the fraud cases that we've already talked about in the January monthly. The other nice thing is our part two crimes were minus 18 from last year, and we are well below, over probably 37 cases lower than in 2019. So we've consistently seen a reduction. You see our crime rate go from 859 in 2019 to 2145 in 2020. That increase was the fraud and the unemployment. And then in 2021, back down to, you know, 1,091. And then we have our field training program. They did a very nice job of just kind of highlighting our new officers. It's something new. We haven't put in there before, but it's just kind of a nice thing. And then into our directed patrols in the traffic concern areas, you're going to see a large amount of data there that talks about how many details we've done in certain areas and the months we've done it through, and total hours, total violations, total arrests. We had a total of 878 violations on Route 34. When I say violations, that's tickets. And then we had a total of 37 arrests from those stops that we've done on Route 34. Going over the next couple pages, you're going to see our portable speed sign and speed sign results. When somebody comes in and complains and there's a speeding problem, we do traffic studies to identify whether or not we really have a problem. When we identify an area where, yeah, a problem, we probably have one, how severe it is. You know, it's easy to determine when it's really severe, but if it's kind of on that edge, a lot of times we'll get EEI involved in it, and they do their engineering study because they're smarter than we are. And then, we kind of, go from there as far as our enforcement data goes. And then the page 40, our radar patrol, those are, that's something we started mid-year last year, mid to late year. But it's worked out pretty well. We've got some really good feedback from citizens. There's a bunch of pages with photos of just traffic, different things with traffic, talking about e-citation. We had a study, we actually had a Boy Scout complaining about speeding, and so we kind of turned it back on him and said, hey, let's work together to see if we have a problem, and so we taught him how to do a lot of stuff, using the radar gun and tracking, how we track and why we track and the importance of tracking and things like that. Page 48 and 49, our response to resistance, our 2021 response to resistance report. This is where we track all use of forces, and we call them use of force. It's actually called response to resistance. Anytime that we go above what normal arrest activity would be when we take custody of someone, that's counted as a response to resistance. So if I'm going to arrest Seaver and Seaver pulls away from me and I put wrist lock on Seaver, that's a response to resistance. If you pull away from me and I take you to the ground, that's a response to resistance. If I pull my handgun because I believe you may be armed and I point my gun, my taser, Bola wrap, any lethal or less lethal weapon that we point at someone is a response to resistance. So throughout the course of 2021, we had a total of 13,450 incidents. We had 9 response to resistance that we tracked. One of them obviously was an officer-involved shooting. We also track in here, did we have substance abuse or emotional, or I should say the second chart down is no substance abuse or emotionally disturbed. Well, of the 9, 4 of them, they were not drunk, and we do not believe they were emotionally disturbed. Alcohol influence, of our 9, 3 of them were under the influence of alcohol. Drug influence, 0. Emotionally disturbed, 0. Combination of alcohol and drugs, 0. Combination of substance and emotionally disturbed, we had 2. So the nice thing is, and when we talk a little bit later on, we had 144 CIT-type calls in 2021. We had 9 use of force or response to resistance reports. Our officers are looking at CIT. They are trying to talk people through things. They are being patient with the conversation. They are de-escalating the situation. And we had, of those 144, we had 1 response to resistance, but we also had 70 or 80 actual committals. So people were actually transported to the hospital. So I kind of look at our response to resistance numbers, and you can see in 2020 we had 8, 2021 we had 9. And then there's some quick facts on page 49 that really have to do with, if you break it down and you look at it, those are just the nuts and bolts numbers. Going over to our bias-based policing, we also track on a monthly basis our traffic stops, and we break our traffic stops down by race. It's a racial profiling data. This is statutory. It's something we have to do, and we enter that data. Every single traffic stop, whether citation or written warning, is entered into IDOT, and IDOT tracks those numbers. What we do is we take our population in the city broken down by the racial makeup of our population, and you can see it's Caucasian, African American, Native American, Hispanic, Asian Pacific Islander, and then multiracial. So we track our makeup of our city residents. But because we're only stopping roughly 29% of our drivers that we stop are from the actual city of Yorkville 60560, we also compare it to our school district data, which is a larger area. And because a lot of those families travel in and out of town, you can see that there's a difference in the racial makeup of our city as compared to our school district. And when you compare that to our officer statistics and with what we're stopping, I look at that and I'm pretty happy with our numbers. You know, we're stopping, you know, 62% year-end totals, our drivers are Caucasian. We're stopping 62%, our population 66%. If you look at African-American population, we're stopping, let me find my numbers, 13%, where the school district population is 8%. Okay, you look at the Hispanic population, we're stopping 22%, they're at 16%. So what we do, and you can see in the report, I worked with a professor from Western Illinois University, and he has a statistical test known as Epsilon, or the percent difference. And he always, when he does studies, it's that 15% difference. Once we get 15% or greater, that's something that we look at and say, hey, okay, what's our reason for being 15% or more higher and stopping a particular group of people, right? And that's where we track that and identify that and say, do we have a problem with an officer profiling, maybe inappropriately? Now, there's a lot of different reasons. At nighttime, somebody could say, well, you stopped me because of my particular skin color. But at nighttime, I can't see what that person looks like, right? Because they're going by me at night and I can't see it. So there's certain reasons why certain officers could be up in a certain category, but we track that monthly to try to make sure that throughout the course of the year, we're not seeing a significant larger increase in the number of colored people being stopped as compared to white people being stopped. So it's a way for us to track, making sure we're doing the right things. Does that make sense? This is also the page 51. We talked about the 144, and I said 70 earlier. We had 91 total commits. So of the 144 incidences, 91 people were committed, and we had 9 response to resistance incidents. So that really kind of goes to the men and women here.
Just the one for CIT-related calls for response to resistance, Chief.
Yes.
9 for the whole department for every kind of call for service.
Yes, but only one response to resistance had to do with a mental health type of call. We were able to de-escalate and work down. That makes sense. And then you go over to our training. You're going to see a huge increase from 2020 to 2021. What we didn't add in 2019 and 2020 was our police academy hours. We did put those hours in there. Hours for new officers going to basic academy are just under 2,300. Even if you remove those 2,300 or 2,298 totals from that top, we are still 673 more hours in general training than we were the previous year before. So our goal is really to make sure we train and train and train, and we focus on a variety of different things, you know, building searches, de-escalation, autism awareness, mental health type training. So our training program has really jumped up. And we're also looking to train instructors, so I don't have to bring in an instructor and pay for it. We trained Robbie Hart to be our defensive tactics instructor, and he went to Gracie ground fighting. So he's able now to come back and train our staff. So I'm not having to hire somebody to do that. We pay him to get trained to be an instructor. And then from there, let's go into the community. There's just a lot of different pictures about, you know, different community events we were at, involved in, and there was just a ton. So this report was put together by Ray, Bear, and Garrett, collecting data, myself, and then Kirsten Baylock. Kudos to her because she rocked it putting this thing together, and all the data, and making sure the numbers are correct, and the reviews, and the photos, and so I just want to throw out a quick kudos to her because she spent a ton of time on this. So questions, concerns, issues, anything new?
Huh?
All right.
We'll forgive your two type this.
Any questions about the annual review?
I have none.
Couldn't have done a better job.
Right. Super.
They did a good job.
Great, man.
They did a good job.
Yeah. Very good. And I guess we'll move on to item number 3, PS 2022-06, the adjudication reports for January and February 2022.
Awesome. So a lot of the same types of violations you guys are used to seeing. There's a couple in here that I'll point out. We had parked on a roadway, expired registration. That was a complaint we've been receiving in Wendat Ridge. They were parked in a T intersection. We went and spoke to them 3 separate times. They continued to do it. They were finally issued an ordinance ticket. You don't normally see our guys write tickets like that, but we will always try to talk to someone first. In that case, they just didn't listen. And if you, Dan, if you look at the name, you'll understand.
McNeilis?
Nope. Page 9. I'm sorry, page 1 of 1, it should be the one, second page in. They're just not police friendly. They haven't, have never been police friendly. So, and then we had the dog running at large, would happen to do with the 400 block of Honeysuckle. We've had several neighbors send video of us or of the dog going after. We had one where it was going after a FedEx guy, and the FedEx person, or actually lady, got in the truck before the dog. We got video of that. We issued citations for that, or ordinance tickets for that. It's kind of a common problem. The other ones that I wanted to bring up were expired registration. You're gonna see, we don't typically write those. These registration plates have been expired for well over 2 years. So it's one of those where if they come into our city court here and they show they have valid registration, a lot of times our hearing officer will dismiss the ticket. And that our goal is compliance. So you write them the ticket, they come in, they could write a state ticket for it, they didn't. They wrote an ordinance ticket, which is giving them a break, number one. And then number two, if they come in here, it turns out, however, that they were fined $75 because they didn't get it fixed. So, and that's pretty much it.
The name I see is Briar.
Buyer.
Is that the,
Yeah.
And then Rios, I know George.
Yeah, that one I don't know, the one before that.
I know George. Thanks. Well.
And that's it.
Okay, any questions about the adjudication reports?
No.
And then finally on the agenda for new business is PS 2022-7. Fiscal year 23 purchases of police vehicles.
I'm going to turn it over to Bear.
And I want to hear how frugal he is with this.
Perfect. So first off, I'm going to start off by thanking all of you. I want to kind of describe our fleet a little bit first. As Chief Jensen had mentioned, we have 22 vehicles in our fleet. That it's been a slight reduction since he's taken office. We've discussed certain things, such as a squad rotation plan, and really being able to dissect our fleet, track costs, track repairs, and what a good life for the vehicle would be. As I'm looking at this, one of my goals is not to have cars broken down where they have to go up on a tow truck and get sent to auction because they physically can't run when they're at the end of their life. We don't want a junkyard out here, right? And the good news is right now we don't have that. So as I go over the fleet, the City of Yorkville has a scoring system that goes over when a vehicle should be replaced, and a lot of items that it goes over is, first off, the kind of vehicle it is. An administrative vehicle such as Chief Jensen and I have, that's something that's going to last much longer because it's not a frontline vehicle for our patrol division. So our admin vehicles, expected life is typically a minimum of 7 years. As we get into frontline vehicles, those have a typical lifespan of about 5 years. Those vehicles are running in the worst of conditions in the hot summer days. Our officers working 12-hour shifts and usually 2 officers assigned per vehicle. So basically half the year that vehicle's in use. So as we go over that, our patrol division has 12 frontline vehicles. Then we have community service officer vehicles, which we're standing at 2. Those are basically squad cars that are nearing the end of their life that we convert over to our CSO cars because they don't need to be responding code. And so as we look at that, then we've got our investigative vehicles. All of our investigative vehicles are squad cars that were once frontline vehicles that we moved over to, hey, we're gonna get these, be good stewards, and this is gonna be the last year or two of the life of the car, so we're investing in frontline vehicles. So as the fleet's broken down, we have 12 patrol vehicles, 2 community service officer vehicles, we've got 4 command vehicles. We have 1 vehicle that's designated to training. So for example, if an officer has to drive to, you name it, here in the state of Illinois, that's the vehicle that they're taking, so we don't take one out of the patrol fleet. And that's a vehicle that's towards the end. And then for investigations, we've got three investigative vehicles. So as we speak of this, as I go over our scoring system and our costs and everything such as that, there's three vehicles that really stick out to me that are not cost effective at this point, but at the same time, the city's gotten their value for them and they're not broken down so we can sell them and still be able to bring that into our squad fund. So there's three vehicles I'm suggesting to replace. One of them is currently a supervisor vehicle that was obtained in 2015, which obviously shows it's a little greater length than we had hoped for to be in our fleet. It's currently at 97,654 miles from the 1st of February. Over the last less than 3 years, over $6,300 has been put into repairs. And it's projected this summer, which I'm using July 1 as a target date, to be at 102,446 miles. That being a Chevy Tahoe, it goes, well, it's 102,000 miles. Being a squad car, it's really like having a couple hundred thousand miles on it. So that's one that I'm recommending. So our scoring system rates it where it goes, okay, your frontline vehicle, that's worth 5 points. Then it goes down to amount of cost that's been put into it. It goes into age that it's been in the fleet, and it goes down to mileage. So these are all contributing factors that it has. So that vehicle right there is rated a 26. And as far as our scoring goes, anything that's rated 23 to 27 points qualifies for replacement. So according to the city's model, that one would qualify. The next vehicle I bring up is currently our training vehicle. That is a 2016 Chevy Impala, currently sitting at 84,024 miles. That has received over $9,500 in repairs since March 1st of 2019. That is currently just being used to go to class, as due to reliability and other things, it's kind of a cash cow right now. That right there is rated as a vehicle score of 24, and like I stated, anything 23 to 27 is eligible for replacement. And the last one I want to highlight at this point is a 2014 Chevrolet Caprice that's currently been assigned to investigations. That is a vehicle score of 26. It has 88,495 miles. It's had $6,251.06 in repairs since March 1st of 19. That is currently, like I said, assigned to investigations. Caprice, since it was kind of a short-lived police car when they brought it back, there's some back ordering issues at times for repairs and things such as that, but it also has pretty decent resale value. But once again, that's rated at 26 based on our scoring system, which shows it qualified for replacement. So at this point, those would be the three, barring some kind of accident or something major, such as a major transmission issue with another car in the fleet that I'd be looking to replace. Going into the document for asking for three new squad cars, Chanel Gale, our new purchasing manager, is awesome. If she's on there, thank you, Chanel, for helping put things together. Our main focus in this are patrol vehicles. We currently have five Ford Explorers in our fleet and are hearing nothing but praises from the officers that are able to drive these. When Chief Jensen sends out an operations plan for snowfall or whatever it is, you'll see officers assigned to SUV. So just knowing that our officers can get from point A to point B in a four-wheel drive vehicle and having that capability instead of taking a front-wheel drive Impala is awesome to have that in there. So for the vehicle breakdown on this, we're looking to purchase three 2022 all-wheel drive Ford Explorers. The breakdown on this, I'm looking to have two supervisor vehicles, which will have a cost savings. And the reason why I have it lumped together is three cars at 180,000 is because not all of them are the same. Two of the supervisor vehicles will not have a cage, meaning they don't transport prisoners, which means that there's a saving to the city. Other things too, all of these are gonna be fully marked vehicles, meaning that they're gonna have the black and white decals on it, say Yorkville Police. I wanna separate our supervisor cars slightly though. While they're gonna be marked, I wanna have interior lighting. So it will be a slick top, if you will, so we're drilling less holes into the ceiling of it, but it also would stand out a little bit too, where they know that's a supervisor on shift. We'll see a little savings there for that vehicle, like I said, due to the fact that we won't have cages in two of those three. The third one is gonna be your fully marked black and white car, light bar on top, prisoner cage, everything such as that for patrol, so that'll be one to transport prisoners as well. As we go through everything, equipment costs that goes in vehicles. Some of our most expensive high ticket items are gonna be your high definition squad car cameras, which are a must, along with your MDTs, your in-car squad computers. So for when we replace a squad car, those are the two items, technology, that we have to keep in there. And that's a very significant cost, where a squad camera is roughly $5,200. Your MDT, you're looking at, with the computer, everything is probably roughly over 4,000 with everything with that. So as I do my math and everything, I'm asking for $180,000 to purchase the three. The overhead on this is roughly only 2% that I'm asking. Just due to some emergency things, if a radio goes out, a radar unit gets broken, something like that. But other than that, I'm trying to be as frugal as I can to make sure that we have state-of-the-art equipment, a reliable vehicle, but also being courteous of money. So
So part of what Bear has done, like last year when we came to you guys about this time last year, is we have, with the ordering of squad cars, and actually I'll let you go into that because sure. You talked to Richie if you would. I'm sorry, I jumped in.
No, that's a great point, Chief. So the pricing on this, the great news, and it's great being a police department. Pricing has stood still since we ordered our first. It's the same pricing of $33,770 as you'll see on the order form, but then with key fobs and registration, I have it listed as $34,000 and change for your base price, because we need keys and registration and everything like that. But everything has stood still in time. So these units would be 2022 models. The pricing has not gone up. It's been a lot since we purchased our first vehicles 2 years ago. Same thing for equipment, that's been a lot due to state bid pricing. I talked to our vendor that I'm looking to use, which is Moro Brothers Ford. If we were to do things on our own and kind of wait or whatever, order time from Ford right now for this police interceptor is roughly 40 weeks. Moro Brothers Ford is expecting a surplus of several hundred of this vehicle this spring, April/May. Things are, I can't get a hardline date because this auto industry is so messed up right now with chips and everything else. So talking to Richie from Moro Brothers Ford, who I've worked with and he's been very good to us, if we were able to put in an order and this were to get approved, we would be looking to take delivery of full install of our vehicles this summer. Which is, I couldn't ask for anything more than that. So that's kind of where everything's at. The lead time with Ford is very hectic, but he has an order where he's looking to receive several hundred in April or May.
So our goal is to get this on, you know, with you guys today, answer any questions you guys may have today, but we're looking to put it on the agenda for our next city council meeting to get the authorization to order the vehicles, but it's FY23 money. We won't take ownership of it or pay the invoice until after May 1st. Same thing we did last year, because I think last year we were 16 to 20 week lead time, if I'm not mistaken. I could be off a little bit on the weeks, but we were 16 to 20, I believe. If we don't get in this order group now, we could be waiting 40 weeks. And so Richie is kind of saying, hey, I need to know we can put it in there once he puts it in there, you know, we're going to be good to go.
We'll be in that queue and we'll be in.
Yeah.
I'm very confident that things will work well in us taking delivery this summer, which would be fantastic.
So one of the other things that we do with our budget for making sure we're always trying to afford squad cars. So this last year we purchased two cars. FY22, I should say, our current budget, we purchased two cars. I still have money in there for two vehicles. I always want to keep money in there for at least one, because if we wreck a car, I don't want to have to go to you guys and ask for a budget amendment to purchase for it. I always want to try to have money set aside. The other reason we do that is if we start running into lean years, I've got money for a car and I don't have to come to you guys and say, hey, can you budget money for a car? So we're trying to be responsible with that end of things. The other side of it is every camera system that Bear purchases, we also apply for the state grant through iLetsBe. They will reimburse us that. That money we get from that grant goes into our SWAT fund. When we sell this Caprice, I don't know what we're going to get for it, but if we get 10 grand, as an example, that 10 grand goes into our SWAT fund. So we've been able over the last 3 years to, you know, kind of, I say squirrel away a little bit of money, but if I could squirrel away $20,000 to $30,000 into that fund, it's $20,000 or $30,000 that we're not going to have to pay because we've been frugal, so to speak, in putting money together. So while I know we came to you guys last year and asked to do this, yes, I'm coming to you again this year. I know you haven't approved the budget. I understand that. But I wanted to present it to you, and you guys are the decision makers of the group. So questions?
So right now you've got in the 22 budget funds for two more cars.
Correct.
That, assuming we're not going to use between now and May 1st. We got 60 days,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
You're carrying that into the 2023 budget?
Correct. Okay.
So these two of the three are potentially already paid for.
Correct.
With unused,
yes,
capital funds for this year.
That's correct.
Which are for an SUV, right? For the
all for, so there's no longer sedans being made.
So it says they're discontinuing. So are they done?
All done. Just
it would be older. So the one manufacturer I know that makes sedans is Dodge. And speaking to other police departments,
we don't want
that's
Dodge.
A big gamble. I don't want to go near it.
Yeah.
The Dodge Charger.
Yeah.
The Ford Taurus, you're looking at a car that's been sitting on a lot for years, yeah, where we wouldn't be able to reuse that equipment. It'd be a one-and-done type thing.
So what are we currently, so our sedans, what are they currently?
They're Chevy.
Chevy Impalas.
So the Impalas that we have right now, I will tell you there's front-end issues, there's brake issues, there's alternator and power issues.
Yeah.
In the wintertime, I'm sorry, in the summertime, when you start seeing July and August and September, you're going to see increased expenses because the air conditioner will go out and we have to pay to get those fixed. It happens all the time in those. The Chevy model, they've been nothing but problems for us. And they're not all-wheel drive. So that kind of lends to that frontline. Part of the reason the frontline car has more points because they're breaking hard. They're accelerating very fast. They're taking corners faster. I don't want a Dodge because I don't need a car to go 200 miles an hour. I don't want our guys going 200. They look cool, but there's just certain things. And I don't know if they're all-wheel drive. I don't know enough about them. But
they can't be with the Chargers.
Oh, they're beautiful cars, but.
So with that, and this is relative to the SUV, are we going to be worried about parts availability if they start to, if the sedans start to falter, or is that kind of a non-issue? Do we have any idea?
I don't know. If we haven't run with the Chevys that we have now, we haven't run into part issues.
Yeah.
Other than the Caprice, that we've run into part issues. I think it was an engine lift.
There was a lifters in the engine. I know it's very expensive, but the Caprice, it's very difficult. I've even talked to the state police had a very big contract doing the Chevy Caprices, and there's been a lot of questions they hadn't been able to solve as far as issues that have come up. So it's a very hit or miss thing where is this really getting repaired? One of the things that's really beneficial with these Fords is that Jovic holds our contract for working on the city's vehicles, and so it's a one-stop shop. Where if there's warranty work or anything needs to be done, we've got a dealership that is right there,
right,
that works on our fleet. And it's an amazing thing. It really is. And they've been so, so reliable. It's been a very good thing.
Good.
So you're going to include your replacement rating card in the packet for Tuesday? You talked about each of them having a rating that needs to be replaced on.
We absolutely
can.
In
there.
Yeah, we can get that out there as a supplement.
Public Works and Parks, when they show us that this car needs to go,
yes,
they give us the ratings card.
So we will always, well, I can tell you, while I'm here, admin cars like my car, investigations, and our school car, they will not be new cars. We will take patrol, their first line, that's the most expensive. They will get the new cars. We will take the hand-me-down, so to speak. I don't drive a ton. I don't need to have a brand new car. Patrol needs that. And so we will take some of the old ones out of the fleet, Dan, bring in some of the newer, and that would be rotated into our school car, our investigative car, and any admin cars that we're going to need in the future. We won't need admin cars for a long time.
With the Explorers, do you anticipate a higher gas budget?
No, we haven't necessarily seen that. However, one of the things that we did a very, very brief cursory look into the eco-friendly and the hybrid model. We spoke with the chief, matter of fact, earlier this month from Algonquin, who purchased a bunch of hybrid Explorers. Nothing but problems. So I kind of want to wait until that kind of gets worked out, because he's got multiple vehicles in his fleet he can't use right now, and they can't fix the problem. So, yeah, hoping we can reduce some gas costs, but.
I just asked for my Explorer's a gas problem.
Is it? Yeah.
The NIU Police Department uses those nice fuel-efficient Prius. How about those?
If that's what you tell me to do, I'll do it.
A simple no.
I'm never going to tell you no.
Throw in the best part, I'll go for it.
So. Oh no, you see those driving around the kill. What?
So when does the day of the electric police vehicle come about?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question.
Does anybody?
I think sooner than we think.
I think it's going to, the hybrid right now, the gas electric model, it's out there. But it's not working too well right now, at least according to the chief that we talked to at Algonquin. I think it's coming. Part of the issue that he believes in my conversation with him was that there's so much power that is used between all of the equipment that we have in the car. And you know, we have to buy a larger alternator in the vehicle. The battery is larger. The actual systems in the vehicle are made at a larger level, higher level, however you want to call it. Battery power, I don't know if they've perfected that yet. And while everything's
ways off.
Yeah, I don't know about a long way receiver, but I definitely don't want to be that first department to try it.
The guinea pig?
Yeah, I mean, I do remember going to propane when I was at my previous department. We had a couple squad cars with propane. It was an absolute mess, and we ended up pulling it out and getting out of the contract, and it was so expensive. It actually was going to save us a ton of money. It just never worked out where we could get it to work. But
we had natural gas vehicles at the university. I'm not with my private used car, and it was a lot of fun when you come to an intersection making a turn, and all of a sudden the engine dies, and you're going to push the button to switch.
And if you got power steering, I hope.
Gas.
Yeah. So it would definitely be something we would look at in the future, but I definitely
want to see
two or three. It's a great question. I'd like to wait at least 2 years before we start looking and make sure they solve some of the hybrid type issues that we face, unfortunately. So this is on the agenda for City Council approval to actually do it. Obviously I can need your guys' approval to do it. So
I have no problem putting that there.
The only question I had Barrett already answered was the price difference with the cages not being back there. That was the only question I had. So
I would just ask that the ratings card for the replaced vehicles you want to get rid of include that, so they can see why those are going to the auction block and why you need to replace them. And I would also suggest being clear that you also have money budgeted for two cars this year's budget.
Yes.
That have paid essentially for these two.
Yeah.
And you're asking for two more, but only one, you'll purchase, and you're going to squirrel away that extra money for the possibility of having to purchase a new car.
So. Yep, absolutely.
Do you have kind of like a graph of typical trading value? Or what was estimated?
Don't trade in, you auction, right?
We typically auction. Yeah. We typically auction. And in all honesty, with the differences in the fleet that we've had and some of the vehicles that we've gotten rid of since 2019, they had to be towed off the lot. We got very little bit of money.
Scrap.
And so it's really going to depend on the car. We did get rid of one last year that had the larger Corvette engine in it.
So one of the Caprices, and that body wasn't as clean as this one, and it was about 20,000 more miles. That one was sold at a used car dealership that's where it ended up going. And I want to say that, don't hold me to this, but it was ballpark of $10,000. I think the city received roughly $9,000 of that. Is there some kind of consignment type thing? But with used car values, as you guys have seen, this is a good thing for us.
That was my question about the Caprice, which I had the Corvette engine.
Yeah.
Just the engine alone was worth probably more than the car itself.
That's what we've been told. Yeah. So if we can sell and get more money, especially in today's used car market.
Yeah, it's good. All about it.
Yeah. He might buy it. Yeah. You never know.
Just for the engine. Drop it in one of his cars.
That's all I have.
Any other questions about vehicles? No? Everyone agree to move it on to the agenda for Tuesday?
Sounds good.
Okay. That concludes new business. Is there any old business that we need to address? Any additional business? No? Nope. Guess then we will adjourn the March 3rd, 2022 Public Safety Committee meeting at 7:03.
Awesome.
Did my blood get counted for the Fairfield Police blood when I donated last month?
Better enough.
Woman better if counted on her.
I don't want Bear taking credit for it.